Today on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast, we're talking about some starting pitchers who were just awful last night. Justin Verlander, David Price, Steven Matz. We've also got the Zero Extra Base Hit Club. Oh, yeah. Some noteworthy players who have yet to double or triple or homer. And we have Heath Towers. Sure, we have Heath Towers today. Oh,
yes.
Does that work for you guys?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, I know we're getting a late start, but independent of that, Heath, was Chris on time today?
Chris was on time and early. I'm gonna answer for myself because I don't trust Heath to paint the right picture.
Yeah, he didn't answer correctly, but if... I mean, he did answer correctly. He didn't let me answer when you addressed the question to me.
Right.
But yeah, I think Chris was here like 9:10 or something.
Okay, so right. It was 9:04.
That's pretty good.
Well, in fairness, we're probably both right because 9:04 by Chris's clock is actually 9:10.
This is, I've been making a point to leave my house early, and I took a picture of my Google Maps to show you guys. The traffic was like 20 minutes backed up today, and I still got here on time.
It seems like every day you're on the podcast, traffic is 20 minutes
back. Right, I don't understand why you're surprised by this.
The world is conspiring to keep me off this podcast.
Or maybe that's just how long traffic is at that time of day.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it is.
No.
Well, you're here, and we're happy about it, so let's get to the show. I want to tell you all about Sportsline, sportsline.com. You can check it out at sportsline.com/podcast for $10 a month. You get outstanding advice if you like picking games. The computer simulates every game many, many times to get very accurate results. You get A, B, and C grades against the spread. For baseball, you get A, B, and C grades on the sides and on the totals. You've got great written content from our experts. So just check it out. $10 a month. Very affordable. Sportsline.com/podcast. And there's a lot of free content on there too. So. You don't have to pay just to, just start exploring. Daily Fantasy Live podcast with Chris and Heath and Mike. Those three guys give you the daily fantasy advice every single day. So check that out, the Daily Fantasy Live podcast. And all of our podcasts are available for you at cbssports.com/podcast. Tomorrow on the show, it's going to be sort of a trade show. Oh, trade show. How about that? Buy low, sell high, grade the trade. Our first official grade the trade, which will be a Wednesday feature for you. So send them in at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at Heath Cummings Senior SR, at Heath Cummings SR, at C Towers CBS, right?
Yeah.
And at Adam Azer, AIZER, right? That's my handle? Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know.
All right. So a Detroit fan caught 5 foul balls yesterday. I've never caught 1 foul ball at a Major League Baseball game.
That is 5 more than I have ever caught in my life.
I've had 2 hit me in the hands. One of which I took home or gave to my son, and the other gave me a bruise on my hand for about the next 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, not when worth I was, it.
When I was like 9, a grown man pushed me over.
Yeah.
At a Pirates game at
do we have video of that?
At Three Rivers Stadium, so he could get the foul ball.
I would fall out of my chair laughing at that.
And a 9-year-old being, you know what? That sounds right.
Yeah.
That is not surprising.
The one foul ball I did get actually bounced off of the glove of another child, and I took it as an adult. But he was like 20 feet away from me. It was a screaming line drive down the right field line, and he just kind of popped it up, and then I snagged it, handed it to my 7-year-old.
That's nice.
But the bruise one, that was terrible.
Yeah, that's
catching a ball, baseball barehanded is not really a good plan.
Yeah, or a hockey puck. My friend's dad broke his hand catching a hockey puck. That's probably worse, much worse.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, let's get to the baseball. There's a middle reliever that people should know about. He's only made 16 appearances in his career, but he has struck out 33 batters to 4 walks in 23 and a third, and that is Seattle's Tony Zick. Zick is, it's spelled Z-Y-C-H. He's owned in 7% of leagues. I don't know how relevant it is, but look, if you're in a roto league and you hate your starters or something, you're just looking for good ratios. It's an interesting guy. Plus, Steve Cishek's their closer, and he might not be that good. So, Zick is somebody to keep in mind, 7% owned.
I may go pick him up in my AL-only full roto rosters league.
I'd say it's worth it for sure.
Yeah.
So, how about a nerd email of the day for you statty guys, you stat heads? Here we go. From TJ from a town in Connecticut. Please explain why fantasy baseball analysts use swinging strike rate as a metric to define stuff. What goes into the numerator? Does it count only swings and misses or all swinging strikes? Is there an adjustment for hard versus soft hit foul balls? Why wouldn't called strike rate be a better indicator of stuff? Wouldn't it separate pitchers who can paint the corners and change eye level and simply fool batters? Does it stand the test of time versus XFIP or second half stats?
I'm going to let Chris take the swinging strike part of this one.
Okay.
I think the main problem with using the called strike measurement is that strike zones are arbitrary. And right. I don't know. I mean, I think there is some skill in getting called strikes, but I think there's more skill in getting swinging strikes.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely pitchers who have shown an ability to get called strikes outside of the typically defined strike zone.
Right.
Zach Greinke in particular.
I don't know that there's been, like, there are pitchers that do that every year. Greinke's done it over multiple years. I think there's very few pitchers that do it over multiple years.
Well, I would assume, like, catcher framing stats tend to fluctuate pretty wildly from year to year.
Right.
So I would guess it's the same for pitchers, but, you know, Zach Greinke for one. Jonah Carey did a really good piece on Grantland last year about that. That really kind of went into what makes Zach Greinke so good in that instance, and he was able to get strikes called off the plate at a higher rate than any pitcher in baseball. Why it's used as a stand-in for stuff, I think, is pretty obvious. The best indicator of whether a pitcher is fooling hitters is whether they can get them to swing through a pitch. It only counts. So it's the percentage of swings and misses divided by all all pitches.
So foul balls don't count.
Foul balls do not count. Foul balls are just strikes. And I think that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
foul
absolutely.
Ball, a foul ball is you're getting the person to guess wrong. So there is a positive to that. And maybe that could be included in some way. But a swinging strike is a different animal altogether.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. First of all, how much do you guys value swinging strikes? Because I'm looking at Brandon Finnegan, who had 12 swinging strikes in last night's start and 12 swinging strikes in – actually, I think he had 15. I think I wrote this wrong. I think it was 15 last night and 12 in his first start. I think that's a pretty good sign, and it's something that I started looking at probably last year. I put a decent amount of weight into swinging strikes. Do you?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good, although imperfect, predictor of strikeout rate.
Well, I think it brings us into Brandon Finnegan, who is 62% owned, took a no-hitter into the seventh yesterday at the Cubs. He walked five, and he struck out five, 6 2/3, one hit. He ends up with two runs on his ledger, but, you know, he pitched better than that, and that's not so bad. So if we were kind of taking a cautious approach with Finnegan after his first start against the Phillies, which was 6 innings, 2 runs on 3 hits with 9 strikeouts, what about now after this really good one at the Cubs?
I think that ownership percentage is probably too low, but there's some weekly transaction leagues where people just can't pick him up yet.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any 12 team leagues where he shouldn't be owned.
Yeah. I said on Twitter last night, I think I would drop Drew Smyly for him.
Oh, wow. Really?
I'm not a big Drew Smyly guy.
I wouldn't do that, but okay. Heath, would you?
I don't think there's any leagues. I think most people have a starting pitcher worse than Drew Smyly.
Well, that was this guy did. And I would
Drew
rather,
Smyly was his worst pitcher.
Drew Smyly was his worst pitcher. I would rather take a flyer on Brandon Finnegan hitting his upside than Drew Smyly being able to keep the ball in the yard.
I guess if you assume that if Drew Smyly is your worst pitcher, that's a very shallow league.
Yeah.
Then you can probably get Drew Smyly or someone like him off the waiver wire whenever you want. So then I could understand dropping Drew Smyly for Brandon Finnegan.
Well, is it even comparable? I mean, is Finnegan clearly ahead of Ross Stripling? Those are the two most added pitchers. Yeah.
Yes. I added Stripling in a couple leagues. I already had Finnegan in a couple, but no, Finnegan's pedigree is better than Stripling's.
Yeah.
And he's got better strikeout stuff.
All right, get this man on your team. Would you drop Julio Teheran for Brandon Finnegan?
No.
Probably not.
Well, except for, I mean, he's, again, in that 8 or 10 team league,
yeah.
I don't know what Teheran's upside is.
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that I think when you're looking at Finnegan, you're looking at a guy who, I'm pretty sure he's been a consistent top 50 prospect. He's pitching. He's sitting in the mid 90s, average 94 with the sinker yesterday. He's got, you know, three pitches that he seems comfortable throwing. He didn't get any swinging strikes on the slider last night. But I think there is a lot to like about what he's shown us in his first few starts.
Bad news, Adam.
Yeah.
Tony Zick is already owned in my AL.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
That's how bad these types of leagues suck.
You know who doesn't suck? Jeremy Hazelbaker doesn't suck. You have him in your NL only league. He's now 30% owned. He's went 4-for-4 with a double, a triple, a run scored, and an RBI. And they like him quite a bit in St. Louis. He batted second yesterday against Milwaukee. And this is a lineup that I think the Cardinals should probably use more, because I don't know, you guys probably don't like Brandon Moss or Matt Adams that much. So Holiday at first base and Grichik, Piscotty, and Hazelbaker in the outfield. What do you guys think about JH, Jeremy Hazelbaker? Nickname.
Yeah, I mean, he's a St. Louis Cardinal, so anything is possible. It's what I would say.
It's just such an annoying thing about the St. Louis Cardinals is that they just get these guys who just aren't that good in the minors, and all of a sudden they're in the majors and they're great. It's annoying.
Well, Tommy Pham is not completely out of the picture. He's expected to begin a rehab assignment in about a week and a half, so maybe he's back in about 2.5 weeks. In the meantime, if you're picking up Brandon Finnegan in every 12-team league, are you picking up Jeremy Hazelbaker in every 12-team league?
No. I mean, there probably is a team that should pick up Hazelbaker. But if I see him sitting on the waiver wire, it's not necessarily a must-add for me. I've got to have some type. I don't think Hazelbaker's a long-term thing. But if it's one of my teams where I've got several guys on the DL already, or where I drafted Brantley and Gong or something like that, and I'm a little bit thin at the outfield or at utility, then yeah.
Yeah, it's just like he struck out a lot in the minors, struck out nearly a quarter of his plate appearances overall, only got on base at a .329 clip at AAA, and he's been really old at AAA. It's not like he's 28 right now. I just don't see a ton of upside. It's the Cardinals. They tend to do this. They get these guys out of nowhere, but it doesn't seem sustainable.
All right, I need to say something here.
You have the floor.
You guys, I think about the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast probably 50% of my day. I'm constantly thinking about, oh, what am I going to bring up on the show tomorrow? What games do I need to watch to be prepared for tomorrow's show? This and that. What kind of arguments am I going to have with Heath today, et cetera?
You know how much of my day I spend thinking about it?
How much?
2%?
You were going to say the Fantasy Baseball Podcast, or what kind of argument can I have with Heath today?
Oh, well, no, that's at least 30%.
Okay.
And yesterday, I just sat there, and I imagined arguing with you guys about age, and you dissing on old players, and me coming up with examples of old players that you missed on because you guys are ageist. But today...
Whoa, you guys.
Yeah, you are too. Oh, give me a
Don't
break
put
with
this
your,
evil on me.
With your
this
Victor Martinez. What you said about Victor Martinez last week, you're an ageist.
So, well, no, it's if Victor Martinez didn't have a significant history of injuries, I'd be much happier. I drafted Adrian Beltre in nearly all my leagues.
Okay, fine.
And so Victor Martinez is hitting .231.
But I have a new argument that I wasn't anticipating getting into that you inspired, Chris, and that is this whole he struck out a lot argument. Have you noticed what's been going on in Major League Baseball for the past decade? Everybody strikes out. Big deal. Who cares?
You can't. It's really hard to hit for batting for a high batting average if you strike out a lot.
Well, yeah,
that's a fact. Adam, it's okay to strike, in my opinion. It's okay to strike out a lot in the majors.
If you make up for it.
If you do a lot of other things.
Yeah.
But it's a bad sign to strike out a lot at 25 or 30% clip in the minors, because you're going to face even better pitchers in the majors.
Well, and just like Jeremy Hazelbaker, like he stole bases in an all right clip. He had a couple of decent power seasons, but we're not talking about Joey Gallo.
No, but with the Trevor Story thing, I don't know that I can. Like we know he's a power hitter, so he's going to strike out.
I'm the biggest Trevor Story booster among us.
So I'm arguing with Heath. I told you.
Yeah, that's fine. You can argue with me. Somebody made a pretty good comparison, I thought, the other day yesterday on Twitter, and I don't remember who it was, but they kind of compared Story to Jock Peterson. Except Jock Peterson didn't get to play at Coors Field. Then again, it's not like in the second half, Peterson hit a lot of fly balls that would have left Coors Field, because everything he did was either strike out or pop up on the infield.
The biggest thing for me would be that Jock Peterson's a lefty, and it's young lefties in particular just tend to have more of that adjustment period. Trevor Story, you know, he'll have the platoon disadvantage against righties, but it's never quite as... It's never quite as pronounced for righties, just because you face so many righties growing up that the split for right-handed batters is never as severe.
The thing that I liked about the argument is I think Trevor Story will have at least one Jock Peterson month coming up soon.
Yeah. Okay. No, when I look at Trevor Story, I still think there's like a 20% chance he doesn't have the job by June. But I think if he keeps the job, he's going to end up with close to 30 homers.
30 is what Scott predicted yesterday.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move the show along here. I want to see if we can get to some emails a little bit later today.
One other one I wanted to point out. I did see somebody compare him to Devontae Freeman on Twitter, and I thought that could end up being an outstanding cross-sport comp.
Well, why?
Outstanding start, and then Devontae Freeman was kind of not good for a while, but was still fantasy relevant because he just kept getting playing time.
Yeah, all right. I don't know why people are trying to, expect Trevor Story to be bad? Like, I get he strikes out a lot, and yeah, he might have a really bad month, but I mean, this is a really good prospect, right? Who did some very good things. Why are we picking him apart and expecting negative things?
Scouts were never totally sold on his tools, despite, pretty solid minor league production. He's never been a guy, I think, that wowed scouts. Like, he was a top 100 prospect once and was like 92nd at Baseball America. Had one bad season and completely fell off the map and never got that prospect rating back. Right. Now, I'm not saying that's fair, but these biases tend to kind of self-reinforce themselves.
All right. Well, I took a Twitter poll yesterday and I asked, would you buy low on Justin Verlander? Got 632 votes. Would you care to guess the results?
I'm going to say 62% said yes.
Chris, would you buy low on Justin Verlander? What do you think the Twitter public said?
Yeah, I'm with Heath. I think a majority said yes.
You are wrong. 57% said no. Not interested in buying low on Justin Verlander. 43% said yes.
Good job, guys. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, how do you guys feel about that? Would you buy low on Justin Verlander, who was lit up by the Pirates for 7 runs on 10 hits and 4 1/3 yesterday?
My problem with Justin Verlander is I don't know that Justin Verlander upside doesn't exist anymore, I don't believe. I think he could still be a good pitcher. I don't think he has greatness left in him. And so I don't see any reason to buy low on a pitcher that I'm hoping that can come back and be above average. Chris doesn't agree with this. He's going to cite some 8
no,
starts.
I'm not necessarily. No, I was among the Justin Verlander skeptics coming into the season as well. So don't.
Okay. What were the hums about?
His velocity's back.
No, it is not.
At least it was last night.
No, it was not.
He should not throw the ball that hard then.
Unless Brooks Baseball is lying to me.
Well, okay, what does Brooks Baseball say?
93.6 with his fastball.
Average?
Yeah.
Wow, I did not see that while I was watching the game. I was also doing a podcast while I was watching the game, so I might have missed a lot of it. But
I mean, he did have a stretch. He was inconsistent, but you know, he had a stretch where he was working around 90, then he had another stretch like in the middle of the start where he's working around 90, but then he went back and was hitting 96.
Yeah. Well, he does get stronger as the game goes on. I like said to Al, I wasn't blown away by Verlander's start at the Marlins, and that was when he took a no-hitter, I think, into the 6th inning. I was blown away.
That was definitely about the Marlins.
What'd you say?
That was definitely more about the Marlins.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. I think Verlander will probably get stronger throughout the season.
I don't think he's going to have an 8.71 ERA.
But I don't think he's going to have a 3.6 ERA. I think he'll be below that. I think he'll have a solid year. But I'm not surprised if he's off to a slow start. I just feel like he's the kind of guy that gets stronger as games go on and possibly at this point as seasons go on like he did last year. So it wouldn't surprise me.
I just don't think there's a long list of pitchers that were below 8 strikeouts per 9 at age 31 and age 32, but at age 33 started striking people out again.
Well, look, in his last 14 starts, you know, do what you want, 2.27 ERA and 91 strikeouts and 99 and a third. So,
yep.
I don't need him to strike out and batter per inning to be good. Like, it's not a requirement.
Then you kind of need him to be lucky.
No, all right. David Price, bad start. Anyone care?
Nope.
Not particularly. I mean, I think one of the concerns about David Price as an ace is how would he fare in that ballpark? This was his first exposure to that ballpark. I mean, he's pitched there before, and it didn't go well, but I would expect he's still going to have a good year.
He was pretty good in the Rogers Center.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Not only that, he was bad in the Rogers Center before going to Toronto, and then he was great for the Blue Jays. Now, Chris, this was the bad start that you thought the guy who would sign the big contract
right?
would make.
I didn't realize he wasn't at, I didn't realize he was on the road for his first start. Yeah. I called it.
It's the home start. There you go. And Steven Matz pitching on 9 days rest was awful yesterday. And Mets announcers say he may have been tipping his pitches. He was slowing his body down on his off-speed pitches. Any concerns at all about Steven Matz? People were kind of, I don't know, this is generalization, but I saw some freaking out on Twitter last night about Matz.
Mets fans, it feels like they're collectively waiting for the other shoe to drop. Mm-hmm. Like, last season was so good that they just, because, like, there's all this DeGrom panic. You know, there's always kind of a constant state of Harvey panic over the last, like, 10 months.
Yeah.
And now Steven Matz. So, yeah, I'm not worried about Steven Matz. He hadn't pitched in 9 days. The Marlins are actually a pretty good offense against lefties, especially when they're starting Chris Johnson, which they should. So, I don't think that's much of a concern.
I mean, Marlins fans have a reason, or Mets fans have a reason to be antsy. It's been
their entire franchise's history?
Yes. And, I mean, you got your leadoff hitter hitting 042, and your new second baseman you acquired hitting 208 without a walk, and you've only got one good pitcher now. Duaneus looks like a joke in the outfield. Travis d'Arnaud's hitting 067. Everything's going wrong for the Mets right now.
Yeah, and actually Matt Snyder on CBSSports.com has 9 reasons why the Mets are off to a slow start. He does point out that Matt Harvey's velocity on his slider is down. Not so much on his fastball, but on his slider.
DeGrom's velocity's down.
Yeah.
I'm not worried at all about Matt. I think he's really good. I think he's, you know, he's not going to be their, he might be their fourth best pitcher, but he could still be an ace.
I mean, we were saying the Mets have the best young pitchers since Wood and Pryor, right?
Sure.
We saw how that worked out.
Yeah.
One thing about the Mets, I don't think I said this on the podcast yesterday. Heath, you can tell me if I did. They started 2-3 this year. Now they're 2-4. They started 2-3 in 1986. They won the World Series. They started 2-3 last year. They made it to the World Series. But in both of those seasons, this is the weird thing, they won 11 games in a row after starting 2-3. That will not be happening this year. So now they're 2-4.
Because they're 2-4 now, right?
Might as well cancel the season.
Michael Brantley's going to start a rehab assignment today. Here's the big news you need to know about. Javier Baez began a rehab assignment. He'll need about 20 to 25 at-bats before being activated. Adam Jones could be back today, maybe tomorrow. Zach Cozart left yesterday's game with quad tightness. Jose Reyes' domestic abuse charge was officially dropped. This is not exactly big news. We still don't know what his suspension will be, but he will be suspended. Malik Smith left after sustaining a cut near his eye in the fourth inning. He was caught stealing.
Did you see that?
I didn't see it, no.
Diving for second while getting caught stealing, his helmet bounced off of his head, hit the base, and bounced back and hit him in the face as he was being tagged out.
Ooh.
Wow. It was a bad turn of events.
Did you see the old backup catcher for the Royals that's now in the Astros? Was it Kratz?
Kratz?
Yeah.
Did you see him trip and fall on the orange carpet as they were doing player introductions?
I did not.
I didn't either, but apparently the Royals, his former teammates, were like pointing and laughing at him. That's something I need to see. Okay, because everybody's, you know, fine. Delino DeShields out with a sore shoulder. Check on him for tonight's game. And Rougned Odor led off with Nomar Mazara batting second. It was Mazara, Desmond, and Ryan Rua in the outfield. Desmond actually played center field. Mazzara, guys, 76% owned. He batted second, went 2-for-4 with a run scored and an RBI. Is this just a hot start, or is this the start of something really good for Nomar Mazzara?
I mean, this is a guy that we expected to be really good, so if he does well, we're all going to believe it, right? The one guy that I'm concerned about, because I think if Shin Soo Chu, whenever he comes back, he's got a job. So where is Mazzara going to play? Well, it could be DeShields, who got off to a bit of a slow start, or Ian Desmond's been pretty much awful so far.
Yeah.
I think either one of those two guys could lose regular playing time once Chu's back, assuming Mazzara is still hitting well.
I mean, you look at what Mazzara has done just in the five games between AAA and the majors. He's 11-for-22 with 2 home runs, 6 RBI, and only 2 strikeouts.
He's no Trevor Story.
He's real good.
There's maybe about 6 weeks before Shin Soo Chu gets back. This will sort itself out. But a Rangers writer, I believe, for ESPN.com was speculating on what would happen, and his guess was Desmond could play some center field, which he did last night, and DeShields could be the odd man out. But we shall see. Bryce Harper, wow, what a start. First of all, he stole 2 bases, and he does have an 18-steal season in his career. That was his rookie season. Stole 2 bases last night. One was on a double steal. But he's batting .313 with 7 walks and 1 strikeout, and now 3 steals, which is second most in baseball behind Jose Altuve's 6. It's Altuve 6, Harper 3, and then a bunch of people with 2 right now. But what a great start for Bryce.
He also has 1 strikeout and 23 plate appearances with 7 walks.
I said that, Chris Towers.
Yeah, he did.
Did you guys know that, though?
One thing we talked about yesterday was how stolen base rates are at an all-time low. If you want to fix that, have more people run against AJ Pierzynski.
Yeah.
Because the Nats just kind of ran whatever they wanted to last night.
And
shocked that a 47-year-old can't keep players off the base paths.
Also, Bryce Harper taught me how uncool I am, because he has the 100 with 2 underlines on the hand.
I thought they weren't allowed to do that anymore.
No, you're not, but he has it. He's got 99 career home runs, so all his bats have that, and I didn't know what it meant, so I had to Google it.
Make baseball fun again.
Yep.
And Texas called up catcher Brett Nicholas. Does he matter? A lot of people need catchers right now. Does Brett Nicholas matter?
I picked him up in my AL-only league. I think if you're in AL-only roto, you should definitely be owned.
Would you rather have him or like some Kurt Suzuki-type scrub?
I'd rather have Brett Nicholas than Kurt Suzuki. And I don't know if Nicholas is going to be any good, but I'm relatively certain Kurt Suzuki's not.
Would you guys like to hear about the Zero Extra Base Hit Club?
Sure.
Yeah.
A not-so-exclusive fraternity made up of former All-Stars and MVPs and some scrubs. Here we go. The following players have 0 extra base hits. And they're not the only ones, but the ones I noticed. Albert Pujols, 148 with no extra base hits. Joey Votto, 222, no extra base hits. Devin Mesoraco batting 105, 80% owned. Curtis Granderson, 1-for-24 with 4 walks.
I'm pretty sure Granderson had a very similar start last year.
Yes, he was 1-for-16 last year, but he walked 8 times. He's 1-for-24 this year with 4 walks. So it is worse, but not so much worse. And Granderson had 1 home run through May 5th. He finished with 26. So
yeah, I'm pretty sure he made it like 3 weeks into the season without an extra base hit. If I'm remembering correctly, it took him a long time.
That could be. Ketel Marte, 4-for-25 with no extra base hits. And CJ Cron, 2-for-26. No walks, 5 strikeouts, no extra base hits.
Yeah, we are a week away from it being okay to panic about Curtis Granderson's lack of extra base hits, because he didn't have one until April 20th last season.
Woo.
If there's 2 guys on that list that I may actually have some concerns about, one is Ketel Marte, just because of his lack of history. I mean, he's not really shown us. He had a nice couple of months last year, but that's pretty much all he's ever done. And then the other one is Devin Mesoraco, just because he missed most of all of last year. He's really only had 1 good season ever.
Yeah.
And you guys don't really care that much about CJ Cron, I'm guessing.
I don't like what's happened to him, but I don't think I have any CJ Cron, and he's borderline in a mixed roto league.
Yeah. Corner infield is not the easiest to fill comfortably this year. So, I mean, a guy who's playing every day, and he's got Trout and Pujols in front of him, so ideally he's going to come up with men on base. I mean,
I mean, you just certainly everybody that needed to fill corner infield already picked up Tyler White. So
yeah. Well, look, I got to tell you about FanDuel, because now that Billy Hamilton has proven the merits of batter versus pitcher data, what are you waiting for? Sign up, start playing daily fantasy baseball on FanDuel right now. FanDuel.com is by far the best DFS website. It's easy to use. No season-long commitment. Get a new team every day. Find the contest that's right for you. Contests start at just $1 on FanDuel. I tried the other sites. Do not waste your time. Trust me, play on FanDuel. It is by far the easiest and the best. Special offer for new users. Sign up today. Enter your first league. You're either going to win a cash prize in that league, or FanDuel will automatically refund your entry fee up to $10 for additional play. So sign up. Try a league up to $10, either win a cash prize or get that money back from FanDuel for additional play. Go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, sign up with our promo code HOMERUN if you want that offer. The promo code is HOMERUN, no spaces. All right, Team Name Tuesday. I'm going to throw out some team names at you. How do you guys feel about these? This is from Zach from the Mile High City. He has Syndergaard, Paul Goldschmidt, and Cole Hamels. So his team name is Thor's Golden Hamel.
It's good. Yeah.
I like it. Dan has Nicasio Keyboards. Nicasio Keyboards.
I get it.
Yeah.
I think what you have to do there is you have to capitalize the C in Nicasio, you know. The Vegan Pagan has Lucroy and Ahmed in the morning.
I get it.
Yeah, you don't get a lot of community references these days. I like that one. And Clay had a whole bunch of Seinfeld team names. I think he actually, this is like his second Seinfeld team name email. And the one I picked was, nobody beats me because I'm the Riz. Like I'm the Wiz and Anthony Rizzo.
You know what I think we should add to Team Name Tuesday?
What's that?
Because we need something added to it, because that was the team name. We've kind of gone through most of the good team names, I feel like. I think we need to do Trivia Tuesday.
Okay, how do we do Trivia Tuesday?
Just come up with trivia.
We just come up with a trivia. That's really fun.
Just like a trivia question.
Yeah, and you just you answer it. There are three hitters in baseball this year with a higher OPS than Trevor Story, qualified at bats.
Oh wow, Manny Machado.
Nope, he's fifth behind Story.
Bryce Harper.
Nope, he's eighth.
Souza.
Nope, he's 13th. Season is
Chris
fun?
Davis.
No, he is not in the top 20.
All right, give us the answer.
Tyler White.
Tyler White is number one with a
1668 OPS.
Yeah.
Daniel Murphy is number two with a 1591. And Jeremy Hazelbaker is number three, 1574.
Wow. All right, let's talk about Tyler White, guys. What do you make of this? He's about 85% owned at this point.
I don't know what to make of it. I don't believe he's really this good.
Really?
The main difference between him...
You don't think he's mid-2000s Barry Bonds.
The main difference between him and Trevor Story is he's got a 563 BABIP, whereas Story's got a 167.
Yeah.
He kind of reminds me a little bit of Evan Gattis.
He doesn't have nearly that much power.
Don't tell him that.
Much better plate discipline.
Okay.
Apparently
as
Chris isn't
as
familiar
long as we're
with OPS.
Minor league numbers mean anything.
Right.
You know, it,
okay. So who is he?
I mean, I don't know. It's entirely possible he's grown into more power at 25, but at 24 he hit 14 home runs between Double A and Triple A. So it's not like there's a ton of evidence that he's some great power hitter. I was thinking like a better version of Jake Lamb. Like a lot of doubles power will put some over the wall because of the park he's playing in, but not necessarily a guy that you're counting on for 25 or 30 homers. It's just the plate discipline plays up. The contact skills play up. He never struck out more than 73 times in a minor league season. So I think he's someone that you can look at and see if he hits 285, gets on base and hits 18 homers, you're probably pretty happy with his season.
Would you rather have rest of season Lucas Duda or Tyler White?
It probably depends on the format. If it's Roto on any power, I'm probably going with Duda, but any other format, or if I just don't need home runs that much, I'm probably going Tyler White.
Okay. Would you rather have Chris Carter or Tyler White?
I mean, that's kind of a more extreme version of the previous answer. If I need power exclusively to the detriment of all other stats, I will go with Chris Carter. I think if I need anything else, I'm probably going Tyler White.
How about this one? And Heath, you're allowed to talk too. Hanley Ramirez or Tyler White? And why am I, wait, you know what? No, stop. I don't know why I keep comparing him to first baseman. Maybe I should be comparing him to third baseman. But you can answer that, meanwhile. Hanley Ramirez or Tyler White?
I think I'd probably rather have Tyler White. Upside.
Okay. How about...
I mean, doesn't Hanley have just as much, if not more, upside? Like,
does Hanley still have upside?
Aren't we just saying Tyler White has upside because he's young?
Yes.
Whereas, like, Hanley's 32, okay, but, like, his upside's actually a lot higher than Tyler White's.
I don't... Yeah. I guess, as a Marlins fan, remembering what his greatness was 7 to 8 years ago, yes, he has that upside.
Dodgers fan who remembered just three years ago.
Look, Hanley hit 19 home runs in 105 games last season. Okay, right. I know he hit 250. He was bad all over the place, but I don't think White's going to hit 19 home runs in 105 games. I would be pretty surprised at that.
Okay.
So then if you go back another year, he hit 283.
With 13 home runs in 128 games.
Sure.
I think Tyler White could definitely do that.
He could definitely do that.
And he could hit 283.
And then you go back another year and it's 20 homers in 86 games and a 345 average. I don't see how, beyond just the ephemeral notion of youth, I don't see how you can make an argument that Tyler White has more upside.
Good
well,
for you.
Okay. I guess if like you assume 90, that for 90, the first time in 4 years, Hanley Ramirez might play more than 120 games.
Okay.
If he's going to combine his best power season and his best average
season. If we assume that Tyler White definitely doesn't lose his job to one of the best hitting prospects in baseball.
Well, he's not going to the way he's going right now.
Sure. So if he hits his best case scenario and keeps his job.
That's what upside is, isn't it?
Right. But I just don't see how he has more upside than him.
I think you're forgetting that Hanley Ramirez was actually amazing for a month last year, and then he hurt his shoulder running into the outfield wall. So
was legitimately leading baseball in average exit velocity.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, look, injuries are a part of the thing with Hanley Ramirez, don't get me wrong, but he still and he's off to a nice start this year. He still can play. All right, let's get moving here. I'm going to read four names. This is four up. Tell me who you're most encouraged by. Jonathan Scope, who only has one home run, but he has four doubles, and Scope is batting .316. He's 73% owned. Nick Castellanos, 46% owned, hit his first home run yesterday. He's batting .353 with a double and a home run, but no walks, five strikeouts for Castellanos. Chris Carter, .261 with three home runs, three walks, 10 strikeouts. And Daniel Murphy, batting .471 with two home runs, and we just talked about him in the OPS trivia question. Scope, Castellanos, Carter, Murphy, who are you most encouraged by?
I think it's, for me, it's pretty easily Daniel Murphy. And he's a guy that the second half stats matter more truthers probably should have been more excited about, because we looked at his playoff stats and said, wow, he hit for all that power in the playoffs. He's never done that before. He hit for a ton of power after the All-Star break. And that's carried over. He's in the middle of what should be a pretty decent order. And he's also just better than all these other guys.
Over under 17.5 home runs for Daniel Murphy.
That's a good number. I will go just barely over.
I'm going to push. He gets 17 with one extra base home or, inside the park home run.
That would be 18.
We're calling it 17.5.
Is he clearly? I'm sorry, Chris, is Daniel Murphy clearly better than Jonathan Scope?
I think he's safer. I think I might like Scope's power upside a little more.
Okay.
I want to talk for just 1 sec about Castellanos, because he's one of those weird players who's, let's see, he's been 24 for about 4.5 weeks.
About 4 years now.
And we just kind of wrote him off. Like, his first two seasons in the majors weren't great. But this was a big-time prospect who made it to the majors at 21. I still do think there is... Like, he's someone that every time I was drafting, I didn't quite draft him late in the draft, but I always thought, what if he takes a step forward? And why aren't we thinking about that as a possibility for him?
Al likes him.
Yeah, Al likes him a lot. I like him okay. I get kind of caught on players like this, and I think a lot of people do, on when is a player who he's going to be and when is a player going to get better. I mean, he's got 1,200 career plate appearances in the major leagues. He's kind of shown us who he is, right?
I mean, if he was 27 when he started, sure. But he is still young enough. He's still filling into. I don't know if it's necessarily true that you can just say, you know, once you hit an X number of at-bats, you're going to be who you are. Now, most players will. But with young players who have upside, like, what would you have said about Bryce Harper going into last season? He had about 1,200 plate appearances.
Yeah.
He had been a low 800 OPS guy. Was he who he was?
He was much better last year. Nobody would have expected that. But Nick Castellanos is not Bryce Harper.
I don't think that's true.
Nobody had him ranked as the number one overall player.
Sure, but nobody thought, well, this is who he is now. And if you did, you were being ridiculous.
He was also like the best prospect in baseball.
Sure.
Which is a little bit different than Castellanos, who was a first round pick, but.
Okay, but Nick Castellanos was a big time prospect who big things were expected from. Talent was there. I'm not saying he's Bryce Harper, but I'm saying that you can't say 1,200 plate appearances. You are who you are. There's still upside there.
All right, would you rather have Jake Lamb or Nick Castellanos?
Jake Lamb.
Probably Lamb.
Let's go to our four-man rotation. Michael Wacha bounced back with an excellent start against Milwaukee. 6 scoreless with 7 strikeouts. Jose Quintana, how's this for a stat? He leads baseball with 53 no decisions since his debut in 2012. And he has had 9 wins, I think 3 straight years, actually. Last year and in 2014, he had a 3.32 and a 3.36 ERA. So, I feel like Quintana is a pretty predictable, safe pitcher. But do you think he could have his best season, Jose Quintana?
I think he's consistently underrated in roto leagues because of the win totals, and I think he's just so solid.
Bad whip, though. Usually. 1.24, 1.27.
Yeah, it's not great.
I mean, for a guy who doesn't, like, Liriano can get away with that because he strikes out, you know, a bunch of guys. Quintana strikes out, he strikes out 178 guys a year because he pitches 200 innings, which is a skill, which is important.
Right. No, I think he's a very nice end of the rotation guy.
Yeah.
And he probably will have his best year because I feel like he'll win more than 9 games.
I don't know why you would think that.
I think, really, are you being serious?
Yeah.
I think the White Sox are a lot better this year, and I think their bullpen should be better than it's been. And, he's already got 2, right? So.
I really wasn't being a smart aleck. It's just he's won 9 games 3 straight years. I don't really think the White Sox are going to be an above 500 team. And they have the same bullpen they've had for the last couple of years, don't they?
I feel like those guys are going to get better though. Like Robertson,
like the bullpen's improving.
I'm going to be a smart aleck this time.
Yes,
and say I can't even imagine why arguing about wins is something that we're going to be doing right now.
Because it's a fantasy stat.
They're so random, though.
He should have more than nine wins.
He's not a 500 pitcher in terms of runs allowed. Like, he's an above average major league pitcher.
Right.
If they're a 500 team, you would expect him to win more than half of his starts.
But wait, I said I don't think they're a 500 team.
How are they not? They're going to be a better team. I mean, this won't really affect him, but if, you know.
They were 5 games under last season.
Rodon and Frazier added to that team. Rodon for a full season being good, hopefully. Adam Eaton, if he stays healthy. I mean, this is a better team.
Okay.
They added Todd Frazier.
Yeah, exactly.
They did lose Drake LaRoche. So I actually know, Heath, you're right. They're going to be a sub-500 team.
Aaron Nola had 4 runs and 7 innings, but no walks, 9 strikeouts. That gives him no walks and 17 strikeouts in 14 innings this year for Aaron Nola. That's pretty good, guys.
Yes, very excited about Aaron Nola. He's showing, the strikeouts are a little bit surprising and I don't know if they last, but I think he has maybe the highest floor of all the young pitchers.
Well, would you rather have a guy like Quintana, safe, reliable, or a guy like Aaron Nola. He's basically what's in the box.
Yeah, I think I don't think he like I think I agree with you on a lot of young pitchers. That's the way that they are. I don't think Aaron Nola is that much riskier than Jose Quintana.
Okay. So would you rather have him than Quintana?
I would rather have him than Quintana because I think he has more upside than Quintana because he's young.
I mean, you talk about someone who's going to get a lot of wins.
Yep, he won't.
And Colin McHugh bounced back, so McHugh and Waka both with good starts. Hooray. Frenchie starting pitchers, Brandon Finnegan is going to headline the list. Are there any others on this list that you feel like you want to own? Colby Lewis, Taylor Youngman, Andrew Cashner, and Nick Tropiano.
I already own quite a bit of Andrew Cashner, and I'm not letting him go, so I hope he gets better.
At what point will you let go of Andrew Cashner?
I hope he gets better. The Andrew Cashner story.
Yes. I mean, he's had a couple of very nice seasons in his career. It's not like he's just always been bad, and we've always hoped he'd get better.
No, he's just someone that, like, the difference between what you think he could be, because he throws so hard, and he does have pretty good stuff, and he pitches in a good ballpark, and what he's actually been have just been so divergent.
See, I feel like he's somebody that was actually, his numbers were better than who he is 2 years ago. And then he had a lot of bad regression last year and was mostly limited. And the whole Padres pitching staff was weird last year. I was hoping they wouldn't be so weird again this year. And it kind of looks like they are.
Well, the weird thing about him last year was he finally started striking guys out.
Right.
And was a bad pitcher.
And, well, I think he had his career high in walks as well.
Yeah, but it was only 3.2, but he started giving up a lot more home runs. The ground ball rate was still there. The stuff is still there. I get not giving up on him. He's just frustrating.
I'm Googling San Diego Padres pitching coach, Darren Balsley.
He's been there forever. It doesn't have anything to do with him.
Oh, you don't think so?
No, I mean, unless he just completely changed his philosophies, he's got to be the longest standing pitching coach in baseball. I think he's been there for like 14 years or something.
Yeah, 2003. Wow. And I didn't even know that. East Coast bias.
No, I've done some research on this, trying to figure out why, like, almost every pitcher on the Padres staff last year had two of three. A career high in walks, a career high in strikeouts, and a career high in home runs given up.
Yeah,
some of them had all three. But almost every pitcher on the team, Ross, Kennedy, Shields, Cashner, had at least two of those three categories their career high.
Hey, for it's Trivia Tuesday for you folks out there. Just think about this one. Who is the San Diego Padres manager? Answer in a few seconds. Craig Kimbrell had a bad outing yesterday.
Bud Black.
What's that?
It's Bud Black.
I thought he got fired. Black.
And in deep leagues, if you need a first baseman in deep leagues, John Jaso is 9% owned. He's a good OBP guy. He's had an OBP of 380 or higher in three of his previous four seasons. And he's going to score a bunch of runs because he's leading off.
I actually did pick him up in a league where I've been starting Byung-ho Park.
Are you ready to drop Byung-ho Park?
No, I still wanna wait and see if he can start connecting on a few pitches. The Twins are in an extremely weird spot right now because they have not exactly faced a bevy of strong pitchers, and four of the top seven in strikeout rate last night, going into last night's games, were Minnesota Twins hitters. So yeah. I don't know what's going on with them.
They're awful. That's what's going on.
They're real bad right now.
Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say the answer to the trivia question is Andy Green, and I'd like to move on now.
The one that I did want to talk about was Nick Tropiano.
Okay.
Because he did have 15 swinging strikes last night, including 10 on 30 sliders. That's really impressive.
That is pretty good.
Just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, he's in the rotation now because Andrew Heaney is on the DL. So Tropiano, 9% owned. And that, 15 swinging strikes on 92 pitches, very good.
And you look at it, and you look at the plot, it's a lot of low and away swinging strikes.
So, news and notes, Jed Jerko has not played shortstop since making two errors on Friday. And Ruben Tejada could begin a rehab assignment this week. Tommy Pham could also begin a rehab assignment late next week, but looks like Aldemys Diaz has been getting most of the shortstop appearances. Cameron Maben's on a rehab assignment. James McCann could miss time with an ankle injury. Jared Saltalamacchia is his backup. What's that?
Yeah, James McCann was on the DL today.
Oh, he went on the DL? Okay.
Yep.
Yasmani Grandal and Howie Kendrick should be back today. Gerard Dyson should be back soon. He could steal 50 bases, true or false, Jerod Dyson?
I think 50 was the optimistic take if he played a full season, which is obviously not going to happen now. And I think it was a little too optimistic anyways. He could steal 40 bases for sure.
All right, Jerod Dyson 30% owned. Felix DuBrant will have Tommy John surgery. To save some time for emails, guys, I discovered something today. I can actually, I can't play, unfortunately, DFS living in New York, but on the app, I can still make a lineup. So I made a lineup today, which is cool. Here are a few guys I like, and you guys have a whole podcast dedicated to who you like, but I like Mookie Betts at 4,000 for Mike Wright. I think he's undervalued. If you need a catcher, Evan Gattis, if he plays today, he's 2,600 against Chris Medlin. It's not the best scenario, but if you're trying to save money, Gattis for 2,600 is pretty good. Mike Trout is the fifth most expensive outfielder at 4,600. He's facing Kendall Graveman. And how about Gerardo Parra? 6-for-15 with a home run against Jeff Samardzija, who was terrible against lefties last season. And Parra's only 3,400 playing at home in Colorado. So I like that. Do you guys have any
thoughts? This seems like a stat that will matter to you. This seems like a stat. Jeff Samardzija at Coors Field has a 1.88 ERA and a 1.12 whip.
It matters not.
Been dominant at Coors Field.
BVP versus Jeff Samardzija is the kind of BVP I'm in on.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Doesn't really matter if the batter's never seen Jeff Samardzija.
He's dominant at Coors Field.
I'm sure he has been.
Here is a BVP superstar for today. It is Robinson Cano, who is facing Derek Holland. He's 15-for-37 in his career against Holland with 2 home runs, 9 well, RBI, and 3 doubles.
I was told the same thing about Robinson Cano and Colby Lewis last night.
That was true.
That did not work out well. But we don't talk about the BVP that doesn't work.
No, we don't. Like Mike Trout yesterday had terrible numbers against Sonny Gray, and he homered. What about Josh Donaldson, one of the most expensive players, 5,300, 1-for-13 with a home run against Masahiro Tanaka? Is that scary enough to not go for somebody at 5,300 bucks?
Yeah, I'm not going to pay that much money, not because of how he's been, but just because Tanaka's a good pitcher. Yeah.
Anything else? I have a Syndergaard lineup. I feel like he's the obvious choice today. Is there?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's the problem. Is he's going against Jose, which clear your schedules tonight, guys.
The obvious choice is Corey Kluber against that Tampa Bay Rays offense.
Yeah, Tampa is terrible against righties.
Okay. Kluber it is. And if you want a cheaper option, what do you think about Hector Santiago at Oakland, 7,600? Oakland has the fourth most strikeouts in baseball. Probably will continue to struggle against lefties. They faced 3 in their first 3 games. And
they just swung and missed 15 times against Nick Trapiano.
So you like Santiago as a tournament play?
Yes,
maybe?
I think that's a fine option.
I also wish he was cheaper, but Gio Gonzalez, I think, is a fine play against Atlanta.
Atlanta's been hitting a little bit better than I expected.
They're better. I think they're better against righties, though. Against lefties, they're pretty bad.
Well, it's kind of interesting. Like, here's a BVP that I see a lot that I just don't even consider. Freddie Freeman, he's not very good against lefties in his career, but he is good against Gio Gonzalez. But I will avoid. All right, emails and tweets. We got about 5 minutes. Let's do this. Cody Henning, is Michael Conforto becoming droppable after only a week, save for Nomar Mazara?
I'm honestly okay. Like, I don't think everybody should drop Michael Conforto, but if you're in the, 24% of leagues where Nomar Mazara is not owned, I think that's the right move.
Why are people down on Conforto? He's actually...
It's not down on Conforto. It's just I think Mazara is that awesome.
Okay.
We're talking about a 3 years younger version of Michael Conforto. Oh, who's probably more
talented. Actually a bad thing. I mean, Conforto is like in his prime age-wise. Mazara is the youngest player in baseball. I'd rather have the guy who's... at the right age to be in.
I think that's, as somebody that almost always chooses the younger player, I think that's a good point. We love young players because pretty much if you get to the majors at 21 or 22 and have any kind of success at all, that bodes very well for your future as a major league player.
Also, they haven't failed yet.
But 21 and 22-year-old players are also much more likely to have long bad stretches or get sent back down. I would say two players exactly the same. Now, Mazara's
A lot more talent.
Yes, he's just better than Conforto.
A lot more talent.
But if it was two players of equal talent, and one's been in baseball for 2 years and is 24, and one's a rookie and is 22, well, the 22-year-old rookie may have higher upside, but for this year, I'd probably take the 24-year-old.
Yeah, but I just think Mazzara is so much more talented. He's gotten off to such a good start. Now it's only two games, but we're talking about a blue chip, like a legitimate, like, we're talking about a Miguel Sano, Giancarlo Stanton type of prospect. You know, right. the largest international signing bonus of all time when he signed. Like, this guy seems legitimate.
More emails. This is from Brent in Minnesota. He says, Redwood Falls, Minnesota, by the way, in case you're wondering. Hey, Ricky, Tommy, and Kyle. Twins rotation.
Oh, okay.
I've noticed an absence of song parodies this year. Last year we were treated to ballads, including Young Man, which I sang today, and Call on Me. So please bring this element back. Brent, I promise I will. Who are this year's best end of bench / DL stashes that could end up paying off big?
That weren't drafted, I guess?
I don't know.
Because I would think it's a little late for the guys that were drafted.
I mean, I think you can look at some of the minor league guys in this, like Blake Snell.
Yeah, Blake Snell
is the one that I would be focusing on because I think he could be getting the call really soon.
I guess if you want DL guys that may be out on the waiver wire, Homer Bailey is probably the first one that's going to be back. Maybe even Alex Cobb.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that works for me.
You don't seem very excited about
also,
that.
Also, I did do a Fernando Rodney parody on Twitter about a month ago to the song Fernando by ABBA. So maybe we can do that on some podcast.
But yeah, I also have to break out. It's been a couple of years, but my Domingo Santana parody to Kokomo, which was ended up being pretty solid. Maybe next time he's relevant, does something good, I'll sing the Domingo Santana song. Drew in Brooklyn, Billy Burns, is he going to get regular playing time? If not, is Burns droppable in a 12-team mixed head-to-head league?
I sure thought that Billy Burns was going to get regular playing time.
He will when Coco Crisp gets hurt.
What's that?
He will when Coco Crisp gets hurt.
Yeah, they've got so many bad hitters, though. It feels like you could play Billy Burns and Coco Crisp at the top of that order.
Well, their outfield.
They hit Chris Coughlin second yesterday.
They did. But their outfield is what? Chris Davis, Josh Reddick, and a center fielder.
DH was Chris Coughlin.
Yeah, they could DH.
Better off playing Reddick at DH and Burns in the outfield.
The other thing, I don't think that Burns is a must own in a 12-team points league. Like a roto league, or a categories league. But a points league.
If he's not playing every day, he's not a must own anywhere.
I think he will play more often, though. Like, you might regret dropping him. That's just my take, because I cannot rely on Coco Crisp at the top of that order. Is that fair?
That whole situation's garbage.
Okay, next email is from Anthony. Dear Harvey Specter, Mike Ross, and Lewis Litt.
It seems familiar.
Yeah, this seems comic booky. Well, anyway, the question is, should I be worried about Chris Bryant? I drafted him for his power and RBI. I'm not getting either. Should I be worried about Chris Bryant?
No.
That depends on where you draft him. Some people were drafting him as a first-round pick. I think you could be worried if you drafted him as a first-round pick. That might have been a mistake.
What if you drafted him as a second-round pick?
It's at the end of the second. I think that's pretty close to the way he'll deliver.
Yeah, I just don't know, like, what... I'm worried about Chris Bryant. What should I... like? He's going to hit for power. He's going to get RBI in that lineup. He's off to a slow start.
By the way, that was from Suits. That greeting is from the show Suits, which I've never seen. Zach in a West Chicago suburb. Mr. Blonde, Mr. Pink, and Mr. Blue. The Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
When Giolito, Glasnow, and Urias get called up, which of the three has the highest upside, and how high would they jump in your ranks? Go ahead, guys, quickly.
I'm exceptionally high on Julio Urias. I was actually talking about him on Twitter yesterday, but I don't know how much fantasy upside he has just because he's a guy who's never thrown 100 innings in a season. You don't know how late into the season he's going to be allowed to pitch, even if he does get the call up. And I feel like we might see a scenario with him where he actually gets called up in the bullpen.
Yeah, I would say Glasnow, Giolito, Urias.
And last one is from Jeffrey in Denver. Hello, Ken Griffey and Jr. Can you break down Can you break down which lineups you look at as good matchups for pitchers and which lineups may be dangerous but could provide a lot of Ks, like the Cubs or the Orioles?
The Cubs and Orioles are the top two on that dangerous list. The other one that definitely belongs there is the Astros. Extreme high variance plays. If you're looking for good matchups, the Twins against right-handed pitchers are just awful. The Athletics are terrible. The Braves are terrible. The Brewers, I think, are like a poor man's Cubs, Orioles, and Astros. Because I do feel like they're dangerous at home. On the road, you just exploit the heck out of them.
The Phillies have such a bad lineup. It is embarrassing.
The Phillies do not have a good lineup.
Oh,
but
it's terrible.
I think it's better. It's better than the Braves, Twins, Athletics.
No, it is not better than the Twins. At the end of the year, they will not have a better lineup than the Twins.
Well, see, I actually think the Phillies are a lineup. I agree with you. The Twins are going to be better than they have been. Like, I believe in Sano. I still believe in Buxton. I know I'm...
I was with you on the Sano. Sano can be great.
I'm starting to... The island. Byron Buxton Island's starting to get awfully...
Hey,
thin?
Chris, I gotta wrap it up because the room you're in now is needed. So you guys got to get out. And we've reached the hour and 1 minute mark anyway. So thank you all for listening. More on Byron Buxton Island next time we hear from Chris on Thursday. We're back tomorrow with, I think it's Scott and Al show tomorrow, and Grade the Trade and Buy or Sell. Oh, no, buy low, sell high. So, tweet us, email us. Thank you so much for participating on our show. Chris Towers, Heath Cummings, I'm Adam Azer. See you later.